Listening test. Task 1. You are going to listen to an interview with students who are staying in Linz. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, match the speakers with their statements, A to I. There is one extra statement that you should not use. Write your answers in the boxes provided on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers. Interviewer.
Living abroad is not difficult, and many people enjoy taking advantage of the opportunity to live and work overseas, its other things, of what you can gain from broadening your horizons. I'd like to ask my guests how they think they have benefited from living abroad.
Ross.
Hello, my name is Ross, and I've been living in Linz in Austria for, well, since September, so around 6 months. Again, as part of my university course. So far, I have to say it has been one of the best years of my life, and I would recommend living abroad to anybody who was thinking about doing it. There are so many benefits to doing this. I guess if I had to just stick to two, I would say firstly that, of course, the language benefits are unbelievable. I mean, my ability to speak German and have sort of everyday conversation, really, as opposed to talking about the big politics that you learn in school. That ability to just make, you know, small talk and talk to people every day has increased dramatically, something for which I'm very thankful. And the second really is just I've had many new experiences since being here, which sounds very general, but I mean particularly meeting new people and the ability to just...
Josh.
Hi, my name's Josh. I would say that apart from the obvious language benefits, living abroad looks really good on your CV. I mean, future employers, I've been told that future employers always like to see people who are worldly and cultured. And yes, obviously, if you speak a second language, that's also really good. But any time spent living abroad, be it 2 months or 2 years, is really beneficial when you're looking for a job. Another thing that I would say is really good is the fact that sometimes when you go abroad as an English speaker, you can, or as a speaker of a foreign language, you can get paid a lot more than you would be paid in the UK simply because you have this natural language skill that you can then pass on to other people. I've also found living abroad to be a lot cheaper. As someone who lives in London and has been paying up to £1,000 per month for rent, it's really refreshing to come to a country like Austria and end up paying somewhere between 250 and 350 euros a month for rent.
Aaron.
Hi, my name's Aaron, and I would say for me, the biggest benefit of living abroad is really immersing yourself in another culture. I think coming from America, someone who studied German for many years, you can learn a lot about a culture, but until you're really part of that culture, until you're really living somewhere, so longer than a 2 week or 1 month vacation, when you're really living somewhere and you get involved in the day-to-day aspects of that culture, do you really start to understand why things are the way they are? Why it's so important for families to get together and things like that. So that's the biggest thing that living in Austria has helped me to learn.
Interviewer.
Living abroad is not difficult, and many people enjoy taking advantage of the opportunity to live and work overseas, etc. other things, of what you can gain from broadening your horizons. I'd like to ask my guests how they think they have benefited from living abroad.
Ross.
Hello, my name is Ross, and I've been living in Linz in Austria for, well, since September, so around 6 months, again, as part of my university course. So far, I have to say it has been one of the best years of my life, and I would recommend living abroad to anybody who was thinking about doing it. There are so many benefits to doing this. I guess if I had to just stick to two, I would say firstly that, of course, the language benefits are unbelievable. I mean, my ability to speak German and have sort of everyday conversation, really, as opposed to talking about the big politics that you learn in school, that ability to just make, you know, small talk and talk to people every day has increased dramatically, something for which I'm very thankful. And the second really is just I've had many new experiences since being here, which sounds very general, but I mean particularly meeting new people and the ability to just...
Josh.
Hi, my name's Josh. I would say that apart from the obvious language benefits, living abroad looks really good on your CV. I mean, future employers, I've been told that future employers always like to see people who are worldly and cultured. And yes, obviously, if you speak a second language, that's also really good. But any time spent living abroad, be it 2 months or 2 years, is really beneficial when you're looking for a job. Another thing that I would say is really good is the fact that sometimes when you go abroad as an English speaker, you can, or as a speaker of a foreign language, you can get paid a lot more than you would be paid in the UK simply because you have this, this natural language skill that you can then pass on to other people. I've also found living abroad to be a lot cheaper. As someone who lives in London and has been paying up to £1,000 per month for rent, it's really refreshing to come to a country like Austria and end up paying somewhere between 250 and 350 euros a month for rent.
Aaron.
Hi, my name's Aaron, and I would say for me, the biggest benefit of living abroad is really immersing yourself in another culture. I think coming from America, someone who studied German for many years, you can learn a lot about a culture, but until you're really part of that culture, until you're really living somewhere, so longer than a 2 week or 1 month vacation, when you're really living somewhere and you get involved in the day-to-day aspects of that culture, do you really start to understand why things are the way they are? Why... it's so important for families to get together and things like that. So that's the biggest thing that living in Austria has helped me to learn. Task 2. You are going to listen to a woman talking about her teenage years. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, complete the sentences 1 to 6, using a maximum of 4 words. Write your answers in the spaces provided on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
So I was doing my college applications on the carpeted stairs of our unfurnished apartment. And as I went along, I called questions down to my mother. Mom, am I anything? What do you mean? Well, it says Asian American, African American, Hispanic, Native American. Does it say Syrian or Arab American? No. Well, just leave it be then. Or you could write in Syrian. I left it be. And then a few minutes later, I called down. Do I need financial aid? There's just a box where you check yes or no. This was a peculiar question for me to ask. I'd grown up with my mother, who was a single parent and a speech therapist. She taught stroke victims to talk again in convalescent hospitals throughout Southern California. But we'd always needed money. We'd always been short of money, and that was not really a secret. There were restaurants we didn't go to because we knew there would be a check pinned up on a bulletin board that had been returned from the bank. Once I was going to the bathroom and saw one of those checks and hoped my high school friends at the table didn't have to pee, too. We lived in literally an unfurnished apartment with no furniture in it. And we had the gas and electric turned off more than once. And in fact, my mom had even sent me to the landlords to encourage them to give us an extension on our rent. And this being Los Angeles, our landlord happened to be Jack Haley Jr., who was the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz. So one night in November, my mom drove us up to their house, which was north of Sunset. It was a white ranch house. And my mom waited in the car while I went inside. Mrs. Haley answered the door. It was about 7 o'clock at night, and she was wearing a white quilted floor-length robe, and her hair was done, and her nails were polished, and she had makeup on. And she led me to the kitchen counter where the Tin Man was sitting in a rattier bathrobe. And she asked me how I was doing in school. And I said, good. And she said, well, that's great. That's just wonderful. And the whole time we spoke, the Tin Man was watching a small portable television on the counter, a rerun of Gunsmoke. But our conversation worked. We stayed in our rental. That day when I was doing my applications, my mom came to the foot of the stairs and said, no, you don't need financial aid. She looked up at me with an expression I was familiar with on her face. It meant that she knew things that I didn't, that there were connections, networks that I couldn't understand yet. So I was doing my college applications on the carpeted stairs of our unfurnished apartment. And as I went along, I called questions down to my mother. Mom, am I anything? What do you mean? Well, it says Asian American, African American, Hispanic, Native American. Does it say Syrian or Arab American? No. Well, just leave it be then. Or you could write in Syrian. I left it be. And then a few minutes later, I called down. Do I need financial aid? There's just a box where you check yes or no. This was a peculiar question for me to ask. I'd grown up with my mother, who was a single parent and a speech therapist. She taught stroke victims to talk again in convalescent hospitals throughout Southern California. But we'd always needed money. We'd always been short of money, and that was not really a secret. There were restaurants we didn't go to because we knew there would be a check pinned up on a bulletin board that had been returned from the bank. Once I was going to the bathroom and saw one of those checks and hoped my high school friends at the table didn't have to pee, too. We lived in literally an unfurnished apartment with no furniture in it. And we had had the gas and electric turned off more than once. And in fact, my mom had even sent me to the landlords to encourage them to give us an extension on our rent. And this being Los Angeles, our landlord happened to be Jack Haley Jr., who was the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz. So one night in November, my mom drove us up to their house, which was north of Sunset. It was a white ranch house. And my mom waited in the car while I went inside. Mrs. Haley answered the door. It was about 7 o'clock at night, and she was wearing a white quilted floor-length robe, and her hair was done, and her nails were polished, and she had makeup on. And she led me to the kitchen counter where the Tin Man was sitting in a rattier bathrobe, and she asked me how I was doing in school. And I said, good. And she said, well, that's great. That's just wonderful. And the whole time we spoke, the Tin Man was watching a small portable television on the counter, a rerun of Gunsmoke. But our conversation worked. We stayed in our rental. That day when I was doing my applications, my mom came to the foot of the stairs and said, no, you don't need financial aid. She looked up at me with an expression I was familiar with on her face. It meant that she knew things that I didn't, that there were connections, networks that I couldn't understand yet.
Task 3. You are going to listen to an audio tour that gives you tips for your visit to Disney Orlando. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, complete the sentences 1 to 6, using a maximum of 4 words. Write your answers in the spaces provided on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
Whether you're 9 or 90, you're certain to take pleasure in a visit to Walt Disney's Magic Kingdom theme park in Orlando. The Magic Kingdom is indeed a magical place, with marching bands, colorful Disney characters, dazzling daily parades, spectacular fireworks, and innovative attractions. The theme park also has many places to dine and shop, but it's a daunting task to see all of the attractions in one day. Our audio tour will offer tips on how to beat the lines and make the most efficient use of your time in this magical land.
But first things first, be sure to take along plenty of sunscreen, refillable water bottles, sunglasses, a camera, and a hat. If you have children, bring along an autograph book. There are many Disney costume characters at the park, and they happily dispense hugs, sign autographs, and pose for pictures with all visitors to the Magic Kingdom. It's also advisable to start out early in the day as soon as the park opens. Guests who stay at Disney hotels gain early entrance into the parks, which is helpful to avoid the lines, which get longer as the day progresses.
The most popular attractions have a fast pass, which allows guests to receive a return time to see a popular attraction. You simply insert your ticket into the FastPass kiosk and go to another attraction and return at the time on the FastPass without waiting. Come along, it's time to explore the Magic Kingdom.
Welcome to the train station on Main Street. This is the first place you'll notice upon your arrival to the Magic Kingdom. It's here that you'll be able to rent a stroller, double stroller or wheelchair. If you have small children, it is advisable to rent a stroller. The lines to the attractions can be long, and there's a lot of walking involved in order to see the park. The train station is also the place where the maps of the Magic Kingdom are located. Be sure to pick one up before you leave the station. Check inside the map for the white and green times guide and information sheet. This times guide lists the times for special shows, attractions, restaurants and dining with Disney characters. If you want to see a particular show, take note of the time it's shown and plan your day accordingly.
Map in hand, walk down Main Street. You'll pass a multitude of interesting Disney shops selling all types of Disney souvenirs, from clocks and clothing to cookbooks and candy. On your right is the confectionery. You'll know where it is without looking, because you'll smell the aroma of fresh-baked cakes and cookies. You can purchase a piece of cake or a cookie in the shape of Mickey Mouse that tastes as good as it looks, or an all-day sucker with your favourite Disney character on it. You can also watch the bakers in their colourful costumes baking the Disney treats, but don't tarry too long in the confectionery, as you've many more things to see in the Magic Kingdom, and you can always go back at the end of the day to get another delicious treat. Whether you're 9 or 90, you're certain to take pleasure in a visit to Walt Disney's Magic Kingdom theme park in Orlando. The Magic Kingdom is indeed a magical place, with marching bands, colourful Disney characters, dazzling daily parades, spectacular fireworks, and innovative attractions. The theme park also has many places to dine and shop, but it's a daunting task to see all of the attractions in one day. Our audio tour will offer tips on how to beat the lines and make the most efficient use of your time in this magical land.
But first things first, be sure to take along plenty of sunscreen, refillable water bottles, sunglasses, a camera and a hat. If you have children, bring along an autograph book. There are many Disney costume characters at the park, and they happily dispense hugs, sign autographs and pose for pictures with all visitors to the Magic Kingdom. It's also advisable to start out early in the day as soon as the park opens. Guests who stay at Disney hotels gain early entrance into the parks, which is helpful to avoid the lines, which get longer as the day progresses.
The most popular attractions have a fast pass, which allows guests to receive a return time to see a popular attraction. You simply insert your ticket into the FastPass kiosk and go to another attraction and return at the time on the FastPass without waiting. Come along, it's time to explore the Magic Kingdom.
Welcome to the train station on Main Street. This is the first place you'll notice upon your arrival to the Magic Kingdom. It's here that you'll be able to rent a stroller, double stroller or wheelchair. If you have small children, it is advisable to rent a stroller. The lines to the attractions can be long, and there's a lot of walking involved in order to see the park. The train station is also the place where the maps of the Magic Kingdom are located. Be sure to pick one up before you leave the station. Check inside the map for the white and green times guide and information sheet. This times guide lists the times for special shows, attractions, restaurants and dining with Disney characters. If you want to see a particular show, take note of the time it's shown and plan your day accordingly.
Map in hand, walk down Main Street. You'll pass a multitude of interesting Disney shops selling all types of Disney souvenirs, from clocks and clothing to cookbooks and candy. On your right is the confectionery.
You'll know where it is without looking, because you'll smell the aroma of fresh-baked cakes and cookies. You can purchase a piece of cake or a cookie in the shape of Mickey Mouse that tastes as good as it looks, or an all-day sucker with your favorite Disney character on it. You can also watch the bakers in their colorful costumes baking the Disney treats, but don't tarry too long in the confectionery, as you've many more things to see in the Magic Kingdom, and you can always go back at the end of the day to get another delicious treat.
Task 4. You are going to listen to a woman talking about her experiences as a new driver. First, you will have 45 seconds to study the task below. Then you will hear the recording twice. While listening, match the beginnings of the sentences, 1 to 7, with the sentence endings, A to J. There are two sentence endings that you should not use. Write your answers in the boxes provided on the answer sheet. The first one, 0, has been done for you. After the second listening, you will have 45 seconds to check your answers.
Women in Saudi Arabia could use more respect when it comes to driving. Women are forbidden from getting behind the wheel there. Just last month, a woman tried to drive from the United Arab Emirates into Saudi Arabia, and she was promptly arrested. Now, Saudi Arabia may be the only country where women can't drive, but it happens in other places too, even here in the U.S. Fermette Goldberger tells her story.
I was 23 years old when I first started to drive. It's not that I was afraid to. I wasn't allowed because I'm a woman. I grew up in a small, densely populated village in upstate New York called Kiryas-Jol. And in Kiryas-Jol, women don't drive. It's a village of ultra-Orthodox Hasidic Jews. In my hometown, women can't be jailed for driving like they can in Saudi Arabia. But driving is still forbidden. A woman who drives would risk being shunned and her children expelled from the private Hasidic school. She could be excommunicated from the community. Growing up, it never dawned on me that driving was a possibility. No woman in my family or neighborhood ever did. We were taught that our tznius, our modesty, would be at stake. But I think there's something else. For Hasidic women, being banned from the wheel means being tied to your husband and to your community. Driving gives you the keys to freedom and independence. My husband and I eventually left the community to explore a less restrictive Jewish lifestyle. And I got my driver's license. When my father heard, he said to my mother, "She will kill herself and her children." I wasn't thinking about this when I made my first long-distance drive to New York City with two female friends from Kiryas-Jol. I had borrowed a GPS and got on the road with my old tan Buick. It was dark when we started to head back, not ideal for a new timid driver. I missed one exit, then the next, waiting for the distressed GPS to reroute. I was wiping beads of sweat off my forehead while my friends chatted in the backseat. Suddenly, without warning, cars started coming at me in the opposite direction. I had steered into oncoming traffic. I froze. I saw my father pointing an accusatory finger at me. I saw death. 5 minutes later, after I honked and blinked my lights furiously, the cars came to a standstill to allow me to back out of the mess. My driving has been relatively uneventful since, a few fender benders here and there, but my children and I are still alive and well. I still live in Rockland County, New York, not too far from the village where I grew up. But if the mileage on my car is proof of anything, it's that I've traveled far from where I used to be.
Women in Saudi Arabia could use more respect when it comes to driving. Women are forbidden from getting behind the wheel there. Just last month, a woman tried to drive from the United Arab Emirates into Saudi Arabia, and she was promptly arrested. Now, Saudi Arabia may be the only country where women can't drive, but it happens in other places too, even here in the U.S. Fermette Goldberger tells her story.
I was 23 years old when I first started to drive. It's not that I was afraid to. I wasn't allowed because I'm a woman. I grew up in a small, densely populated village in upstate New York called Kiryasjoel. And in Kiryasjoel, women don't drive. It's a village of ultra-Orthodox Hasidic Jews. In my hometown, women can't be jailed for driving like they can in Saudi Arabia. But driving is still forbidden. A woman who drives would risk being shunned and her children expelled from the private Hasidic school. She could be excommunicated from the community. Growing up, it never dawned on me that driving was a possibility. No woman in my family or neighborhood ever did. We were taught that our tznius, our modesty, would be at stake. But I think there's something else. For Hasidic women, being banned from the wheel means being tied to your husband and to your community. Driving gives you the keys to freedom and independence. My husband and I eventually left the community to explore a less restrictive Jewish lifestyle. And I got my driver's license. When my father heard, he said to my mother, "She will kill herself and her children." I wasn't thinking about this when I made my first long-distance drive to New York City with two female friends from Kiryasjoel. I had borrowed a GPS and got on the road with my old tan Buick. It was dark when we started to head back, not ideal for a new timid driver. I missed one exit, then the next, waiting for the distressed GPS to reroute. I was wiping beads of sweat off my forehead while my friends chatted in the backseat. Suddenly, without warning, cars started coming at me in the opposite direction. I had steered into oncoming traffic. I froze. I saw my father pointing an accusatory finger at me. I saw death. 5 minutes later, after I honked and blinked my lights furiously, the cars came to a standstill to allow me to back out of the mess. My driving has been relatively uneventful since, a few fender benders here and there, but my children and I are still alive and well. I still live in Rockland County, New York, not too far from the village where I grew up. But if the mileage on my car is proof of anything, it's that I've traveled far from where I used to be.
This is the end of the listening test.